Okay. I've got a solution.
That's what we're here for.
Okay.
What do you got?
That's a higher education solution.
Oh, no, I'm out. I'm sorry.
You're done? No.
No, higher education is perfect, actually. We don't need any.
Everything's fine.
I checked in yesterday, and they said they were good. No more solutions needed.
$52,000 a year? Yeah, right. Jesus Christ. Okay, so here's the solution. So yeah. We've talked about in the past in this podcast about protected categories, right? Like your race, your gender, you know, sexual orientation. You can't be prejudiced. Like you can't hire people or not hire people based on certain categories.
Yeah, sure. Right?
And you can't be prejudiced. Like you can't say you know. Well, there are some exceptions. Like the Supreme Court recently said, you can refuse to make a cake for a gay wedding.
Yeah, you don't have to hire someone who says fire in a crowded theater, right? That is
what the Supreme Court showed.
One of the exceptions.
I think we're getting our... Well, that's okay. You're right.
No, I'm right.
I think that's right. I mean, with this Supreme Court, who knows, right? Okay, so I'm going to say a solution to higher education would be... I think it would solve all, and I'm an expert in higher education. We could talk about my book. I have a whole book on this topic.
Okay.
But here's another solution, which is we should make educational attainment a protected category.
Educational attainment. Now you're not trying to say edutainment, right? You're not trying to like the thing where they're like, we're going to entertain you while we
eat. No.
You're trying to say attaining
this
education.
This is not Blue's Clues. Yeah.
Okay. No. Okay.
Right. So I'm saying like, I'm not saying you can't be prejudiced against people, you know, prejudiced in the sense of discerning, right? Deciding on people's qualities for like a job based on what they know, like actual knowledge. I'm saying that you cannot ask them where they went to school and what level of degree they have. So I think we should make it illegal for an employer to ask that.
Okay.
And and that would make it so that instead they would have to ask, can you actually do the tasks that are for this job? And people would have to demonstrate that they can.
So
right.
the where and what of your schooling would be like behind closed doors, like a password or your social security.
It'd be like
number.
What your religion was. No one could ask what your religion is in a job interview.
Okay.
Right?
I got you.
No one could ask what your nation of origin is. They can't say like, oh, that's in your name. Is that mean? Are you from Norway? Like you can't do that at a job interview. That's not a lot. That's not legal.
Okay.
It should also be, oh, I see that you went to MIT. Blah, 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 blah. That should also not be legal. Because it's unfair and it doesn't work and it's all bullshit. It'd be much better for the employers and for the workers and for education for people to just not ask that.
Now, not to stick up for these people, but you know who's going to have a problem with this is all the institutions that charge lots of money for the people to be able to put their names on the resumes. Which is what you're saying shouldn't happen anymore.
But if I'm
in the same like bucket as everyone else, then why did I pay so much for my education of college?
Exactly. Why did you pay for that? Because it was an unfair.
So that's what they're going to say.
Apartheid system.
Although they will also say, obviously, we're providing something that's worth more. That's
right.
Why
they'd say,
more.
Well, they're better. They're smarter they're people.
Better scholarly
they're better people.
Person.
Right. Right. And so you should pay attention to if they went to Harvard or Yale or MIT
your point
or
is,
whatever.
Then that should be reflected in their interview
and their
personality. Then
they should be able to show
how they come off.
Yeah. And things they've accomplished in the real world. Like they can be like, here's a project I did. Here's a referral from someone who I worked with who says I'm really good. Here's, I built a product and grew it to millions and millions of people. I was super successful as a marketer. Hire me as a marketer or whatever it is.
When you're 35, way more relevant to who you are is what you've been doing the last 10 years, not what you did for the 4 years in college and where that was.
Yeah, 20 years before, right. And so if we did this, I honestly think that if we did this, so there's a lot of people out there. I'm not like a strict egalitarian. Okay. I'm not like, oh, I want to tear people down to make people more equal. I don't really believe in that. I actually think it's fine for there to be fair in a fair way for people to excel way beyond other people, as long as it's fair. And as long as there's, then we, you know, provide for the most vulnerable people. I don't care what where the cookie, you know, how the cookie crumbles and where people end up.
Okay.
The problem is when it's not fair and when we don't provide for the least vulnerable. We're not really talking about providing for the least vulnerable in this episode. We're talking about the fair meritocracy, the fair competition in society. And right now it's just not fair, and it doesn't lead to good outcomes for there to be this huge 900-pound gorilla on your resume. Oh, I went to Stanford or I went to Harvard. And all of a sudden, just like doors are all just booted open for you for no reason. Like these people are not more impressive than someone who can say, I did impressive things. Look at the impressive things I did. That should actually count far more than I went to Stanford. Oh, what's the point? You know, what does that show?
Yeah. Yeah. And the system where doors are opened based on like, who has money to go to these institutions or the networking to get in or whatever, that doesn't serve us better either. We're all served better by a system that looks at the person and not like the piece of paper that they hold, you know.
And maybe like, I don't know, 50 years ago, you'd be like, well, how are you going to, you know all that, you know? But now it's so simple. I mean,
now we gladly give away so much of ourselves.
Yeah, our social media profiles show everything we do and have done. And it's not hard to just scroll through the greatest hits of somebody's like LinkedIn and you can see what they did, you know? Not to mention, we could just have AIs that would look at your whole thing and just tell people, yeah, this is like how...
Yeah, no, I already have. I have two eyes and I already use those to look
no,
at...
No, AIs.
No, I have two.
You're supposed to use A... Just a single eyes. That's funny. Two eyes. Two eyes are better than one. Two eyes are better than A. Although I am jealous, you know, by eye patches. You know, I heard a thing about pirates wearing eye patches. Do you know why they always wore eye patches?
Because they lost their eyes in sword fights?
No, that's not why.
To use the periscope thing?
No.
Why?
No. This is so crazy, but I read this. I believe it's true. Pirates would always wear eye patches so that they could go below decks and switch the eye patch and their eye was already accustomed to the dark.
What? That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Actually, isn't that's pretty that cool. Smart.
What? So they could be like out in the daylight and one eye is covered and it's bright. So one eye's getting all the light. And then they duck under the decks. It's totally dark. They don't want to be blind for 20 seconds.
Early version of night vision goggles.
You just switch it and now you have a dark eye that you can walk around down underneath now.
That's crazy.
That's brilliant. What? Isn't that cool?
Yeah, because it does make no sense that so many pirates were losing one eye all the time.
Right.
I mean, like, in a sword fight, that's a...
How do you get the eye?
Right? Either you're going to die or you're not going to die. The idea of losing just an eye and nothing else feels very difficult.
They're gentlemen fighting. They only put the sword in 1 inch, no matter where they hit you. They just put it in 1 inch. It hits the eye, 1 inch, 1 inch out, you know? Okay, so Reddit is saying that this is a fate. This is not true.
It's not true? But it's
this
so...
This is saying, no, so, this is a fable that surfaced a few years ago. It's not corroborated by any sources.
Oh, but I wanted to believe it.
Very few pirates wore an eye patch, and if they did, it's because they covered a missing eye.
Damn it. I liked your story, though.
I know. This says there's no reason. Practically, this makes no sense because pirates didn't move below decks during attacks. Attacks. So it doesn't make any sense. This is like a great urban legend, though. It's so sticky and fun. Pirates actually use it.
Hey, I bought it immediately. I was like, great. I love it.
I did, too. I can't wait
to tell everyone I know in all of my subsequent pirate conversations.
Tell every single person alive.
That's the bad thing. That's why I have to check all these things because I will spread stuff.
That was so sticky. It pushed even what the solution for today was out of my mind. I have no idea now. I'm just free floating now. I'm just surfing.
We were solutioning about higher education.
Oh, yeah. Make educational attainment a protected category.
Yes.
Now, people on the right and like libertarians will hate on this idea because they'll say you're attacking the meritocracy, right? The big debate here between like ideologically the debate between kind of right wing and sort of left, generally right wing and left wing people, although it doesn't always break down that way, is you know, this is the way it's framed. Left-wing people want equality of outcomes, and right-wing people want equality of opportunity with then diversity of outcomes, maybe even inequality of outcomes.
Right.
Okay, there's major problems with this. One is the right-wing people are not trying to get equal opportunity. That's insane, because they're not bringing up the base, right? They don't say everyone gets, you know, free access to education, free, and then their merit would actually decide where they achieve. They're putting huge barriers. You know, what do they say? Some people start the race on the finish, 2 inches from the finish line, right, and other people start a mile behind. So it's not equal opportunity. But the left wing, I think there is a good criticism of the left wing that equal outcomes is not actually a good goal. A better goal is equal opportunity. And sometimes the left wing and the very egalitarian members of the left wing start to think of equality of outcome as a success if they can't get equality of opportunity.
So help me out. Why would equality of outcomes not be a desirable thing?
Well, because in order to get equality of outcomes, you have to bring down the high performers and bring up the bottom performers.
You have to kind of limit people.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So like, for example, in San Francisco, there was a big debate a couple of years ago where I think they actually succeeded at removing the entrance examination for one of the gifted high schools in San Francisco, like a famous gifted high school.
Okay.
And it was overrun with like Asian people, of course, you know. I think that's, you know, a compliment to Asian people. They're very, you know, folk, they're culturally very
overrun.
Interested.
Very complimentary language.
Well, I'm not using complimentary language, but it was great. You know, they people who really valued education, turns out most of them were Asian. They got their kids into this like high powered, you know, gifted high school. And it was because there was an entrance examination. So only people who had prepared could get into it. And and these, you know, San Francisco like leftists tried to end that and get rid of the entrance exam. And then there was this huge pushback from, like, you know, kind of right-wing San Franciscans, which are like left-wing in the country, but they're kind of right-wing here. They're like techies.
Okay.
And they were like, no, keep the entrance exam because it's like merit. It's a meritocracy, right? So if you say, oh, we're going to make educational attainment a protected category to the right-wing type people, that's going to sound like I'm trying to do the same stupid left-wing move of like trying to limit the heights people can reach in order to like create equality of outcomes. But actually, that's not what I'm trying to do at all. I'm trying to make it so that the meritocracy actually rewards people of merit and not just people who have gamed the system, who are born on third base, who then go to these elite colleges and then get all opportunities the rest of their life are just like made easier for no reason.
Do you think it will have a huge shift on like, will it affect much? Like, will it change the stratus? I feel like some of it gets on the paper, but like there's also a lot of stuff that you get just from going to those institutions, from like making connections and like, you know, good old boys clubs and those sorts of things.
Yeah.
That may still, I mean, there's no way to fix everything, but you know, that's, that may still be a thing where you're like, oh no, I'm still, I don't know. I see what you're saying.
Sure. I mean, if you and your friends are like, you know, like I heard about this after Me Too, that in the finance industry, like if you got a finance bro in New York, like kind of drunk and you were just talking to him at a bar, you'd be like, so what do you think this Me Too stuff is going to lead to in your like industry? They just tell you like, yeah, we're not going to hire women as much. You know, they can't legally write that down say that, or like really, you know, in any way leave a paper trail of that. But they were just like, yeah, finance is just not going to hire women because then we might hit on them and lose our freaking careers.
I guess.
So that's a really bad outcome.
Sure.
So you can be racist and prejudiced is what I'm saying. You can break those laws, but you just can't do it legally. So the same thing would be for this. You could say, hey, hire people from Ivy League schools, but no one would ever put on their resume the Ivy League school, and you couldn't ask them directly where they went to school, you know?
Yeah. I guess I'm wondering if the prestige came from them actually being on the whole a better, like, do you think like going to an Ivy League, does that put you in a better spot to compete in the work
absolutely
world?
Absolutely not. Absolutely
you think
not.
Those people.
I find Ivy League people extremely boring and not smart and obedient.
So there's no. You don't think there's anything like worth like. There's not a what I'm wondering is like, oh, is there a thing to be maybe going to those institutions? You do get a better, stronger education. You come out as a better person.
No,
so
I don't think it's warranted that
actually,
way.
I think it's the opposite. Just a lot of name recognition.
Oh, it's all name recognition. Okay. Yeah. I mean, there are exceptions. Like, for example, you know, if you go to Carnegie Mellon's and, you know, mechanical engineering department, yeah, you're like, that's a good department. Like, there's a concentration of talent density that happens to be in Carnegie Mellon's, you know, mechanical engineering department. And so you will get probably a better education. And
if you're,
it's hard to, you know, it's hard to get
into that. If you're crushing all the courses at MIT, you're probably a very smart, like.
Maybe. But even MIT, like, for example, I know this for MIT specifically because an MIT professor was brought in to like critique my program that I built and designed. And he was and everyone was like so happy, like, oh my God, we got this prestigious MIT professor to review our curriculum. He came in and I had like an hour long conversation with him talking about the curriculum. And most of that was me explaining to him educational sciences that he did not understand or know. Like, he didn't know how to do an assessment strategy, which is like what any teacher knows, any like even high school teacher knows what an assessment strategy is. And this guy didn't know because he knew a lot about like physics or some shit, like some, you know, MIT thing, but he wasn't a very good teacher. Like, he didn't know basic educational science. It's kind of like if you went to the doctor,
really deep in his own field, but not in how to.
Right. It's like if you went to the doctor and the doctor was like, I'm your podiatrist. So they're supposed to know everything about like your feet. And so they do know a lot about feet, but they don't really know how to like do medicine of the feet. Like, they just know all the bones and all the muscles and all the, but they don't really know the diseases and like the cures, you know. there's a big gap there. So I don't actually think these Ivy Leagues are providing much benefit except for a selection bias. So they're generally, you know, it's hard to get in.
A
bunch of strong students get in who are already super prepared.
And because of the name recognition, they can certainly bolster a good success rate of their graduates.
And then they have a success rate because of the name recognition. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's necessarily much of a, the benefit is mostly the selection bias and the name recognition. I think the actual schools are just like holding pens. They're just like places where there's a lot of talent density because of the selection bias. And then that feeds on itself and the students get smarter and, you know, they do things because they would have done things anyways.
I don't know a lot about it. I think of it like a professional sporting league where I'm like, there's got to be professors who are all-star, like amazing professors. And I'm imagining that the fancy schools get to buy those professors and have them come to their the way that you buy like basketball
but
players.
No, the research actually goes the other way. So if you actually look at the research, the strongest outcomes of students, like the most learning that students actually do is under the most capable educators, not the biggest researchers. And all of these schools try to identify the biggest researchers and make them into professors.
Yeah.
And so the evidence would suggest the exact opposite. And actually, I think the best proof of this is if you look at Ivy League schools' professors, the professors are not from Ivy League schools.
Ah.
They're usually mostly getting their PhDs at state schools.
They work their way up to.
And then they're the best because they went not to the Ivy League. And then they get into the Ivy Leagues as the professors because they actually went through a meritocratic process outside of the Ivy Leagues, right? Yeah. And then they go into the Ivy Leagues and now all the graduates don't have the same outcomes as, so it's kind of like like that right there shows that it's like an emperor's with no clothes.
Yeah. And I was gonna say, I've heard that conversation a lot where they're talking about now there's too much emphasis on research and publishing for professors and not as much for like teaching quality and engagement with students and student satisfaction. Like they've put the weight on the wrong foot there.
Right.
And it has these results that they want to get, but it also, you know, turns down some other stuff that they may not have.
The other thing this would fix is a big gender and just in general problem with job descriptions. So job descriptions they always say two things and both of them are bad and should be like illegal to
only
say.
Boys, no girls. What?
Well, that one,
they can't. You can't
illegal.
Put that on a
you
job.
Can't put that either.
Oh my gosh.
So what they do is they say you must have a bachelor's degree or you must have a master's degree. And then the other thing they say is you must have 5 years experience or 2 years experience right. or whatever.
Right.
That both of those things should not be allowed to be put on job recs. Largely because women will underestimate their abilities and men will overestimate their abilities. Mm. So if it says 5 years experience, a man with 2 years experience might happily apply, but a woman with 4 years experience won't, because on average she'll think, well, I don't have 5 years experience. Yeah, exactly. And so, but instead, if it said must be able to, you know, run a sophisticated campaign of digital marketing or and actual wrote out the competency that you actually are supposed to be able to have, mm-hmm. then men or women can be like, huh, yeah, I can do four of those.
I check those seven boxes,
yeah. And it says if you can do four of the seven of these competencies, you'd be a great candidate. More, 7 out of 7, better candidate, right? But like, you know, 4 at a minimum. And if they did that instead of what kind of degree you have, what kind of degree you have and like how many years experience you have, if you got rid of that, then there'd be much better matching between competencies and actual job roles.
So that's kind of separate from the school name thing, right? That's an additional thing. But I think this is all like, this all kind of conglomerates into an HR solution. Like you need HR practices to...
Yeah, yeah. And like HR only responds to legality, because HR is one of the most regressive parts of any company. They're just trying to not get the company sued.
Right.
That's like the one thing they're trying to do. There's
not a lot of innovation, and it's just like stay between the lines. All right.
Maybe we should do double. Maybe we should say it's a protected category, your educational attainment, and it's a protected category how many years you've worked in any industry or place. Although that'd be silly because you have to tell people where you work.
Yeah, making a requirement, I think, like you were saying, competency-based instead of time-based. Because you could have spent 5 years being the worst employee at a terrible place.
Right, exactly.
And be like, well, bing, 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 I'm good. I can go there. And as opposed to someone who spent like a year and a half being the star at a place and goes, you know what? I've outgrown this place. I need something more. You'd want a system that identifies the star that outgrew their place and not the person who languished until they were let go. And years isn't just a bad metric sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's good, but having it be the be all end all, I think you're right, is putting it on the wrong spot.
I think so I've never heard of people saying like, so I've heard things in the industry around the tech industry where people will unfairly say, like, for example, I won't say what companies, but multiple companies that I know of,
McDonald's, Nike,
the CEO and the CTO, like the CEO says to the CTO and to the HR team, only hire people from Ivy League schools. And the reason why is because they can then put on their investment decks and in their investment like due diligences that they give to investors mm-hmm. and say, we have, 40% of our engineering team went to Ivy League schools. So right. MIT went to.
And on then this that, boat, all our oarsmen are geniuses.
Right. And that is perceived, and not just perceived, but becomes worth more. The company literally becomes, they say for every Ivy League engineer, the company's worth $500,000 more. And for every non-Ivy League engineer, it's only worth like $200,000 more.
It's a big difference.
In the base of the company. But I've never heard anything like that in terms of years of experience. No one's like, oh, we've got a bunch of gray beards. Great. The company's worth more. No, like that's not. So I don't think there's like a pressure to unfairly reward, more years of experience. So there's no reason, I think, to create any kind of, law around that. Also, it'd be hard to enforce and hard to interpret.
Sure. But
educational attainment, easy to interpret, easy, you're not allowed to ask people where they went to school, or they can volunteer that information, but you technically can't use it in your hiring. And if you do, someone can sue you. Someone who went to the, community college can sue you and say, hey, I think that you guys have been using educational attainment for your hiring practices. You shouldn't be doing that because it's illegal. You should be using competency-based You know, and now that you couldn't have all that paper trail of like investors saying, yeah, get more Ivy League, the CEO telling the HR, yeah, only hire Ivy League, you know, all that would be illegal.
Yeah, you're like, here's my completely nondescript resume on my Harvard Law School letterhead.
Right, exactly. I mean, yeah, they could volunteer that information and it might still have an impact, but it would tamp it down and it would suggest this competency-based approach.
Yeah. Yeah,
people are gonna think this is totally crazy, but I actually think it's not that crazy. I think this is actually a really good idea.
Well, the people who would be the most upset are the people who've invested the most in that system and yeah. would have the most to lose from it going yeah. away.
But that's true.
It's fun. It's a good, interesting thing to think about. I like it.
It would fix accreditation too. So this is where you would fix accreditation by making it so nobody could really trade on the accreditation status of their school. They could yeah. only trade on their own actual skills and competencies, which then would mean people could go to school anywhere. I could start a school tomorrow that said, I will actually get you the competencies that you will need. And it's illegal for employers to ask you where you went to school. So right now it's equalized actual education with brand name, you know, official nice. Legacy things.
Adam, am I allowed to ask you where you went to school?
Sure. I went to school at a small, extremely expensive liberal arts college called St. John's College.
Ooh.
Which is not Ivy League, but it's everyone in higher education knows about St. John's. And so when I tell people I went to St. John's, they're like, oh, the great book school. That's what everyone says. Because it has a very unique curriculum.
Sounds like
but I mean, yeah, St. John's is not exactly an Ivy League. There's no like old boys club that I can tap into. To speak of, although there are some wealthy members. I mean, it's an expensive school, so just like some people who are already sure. very wealthy go there. Like the creators of the Stag's Leap Winery, which is like a major winery in California, they're Johnnies, and they gave like $50 million to the school once because they're insanely wealthy.
I just like the name Johnny. That's pretty fun.
Yeah, it's cool. Know. Yeah, St. John's is a great program, great school. Yeah, yeah.
Well, I went to the University of Kansas. I have my degrees from a state school. No fancy bancy stuff for me, but I liked it. Yeah. It also hasn't come in. I don't think it's really played a huge factor either way for me, but I think for right. a lot of people, that's a foot in the door or foot out of the door moment is what they have written on that paper. And I think this could change at least early prospects because trying to get a job and get your foot in that door is so frustrating. Mm. Anything that can make it more equal, I think, for everybody is probably better for everybody. Even yeah. the
equal opportunity.
Yeah, you know? Even though some
or
people
just
will complain
making it
a little
fair,
bit.
It should be more fair. Like you should be comparing apples to oranges, right? Or apples to apples.
Yeah, and you should want the companies know? In this world to like be getting better people and not just people who like
have a stamp on their forehead.
Right, exactly.
Have a certain name.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's also these schools like I have a professor in college who was a Harvard professor before he came to St. John's. And in the class, he said, when I was at Harvard, the first thing I would tell all the freshmen is welcome to Harvard. You'll never get anything less than an A. Because it's just blatant. Everyone knows this. Everyone at Harvard knows there's just complete and blatant grade inflation.
Yeah.
So everyone who graduates from Harvard has like a 3.9, 4.0, 4 plus, you know? And it's like, they were all just doing college like anyone else. They were just, you know? That's crazy. And that's just a sign. That's just one indication. I mean, you hear these things like this all across the board.
Yeah, I just watched, not directly related to this, but I just watched a movie recently called The Holdovers with Paul Giamatti.
Oh, yeah.
And it's an...
looks it's, good. Was it good?
It is. It was good. I enjoyed it. And
it's a Christmas movie, right?
It takes place, over that time, but it's all set in the environment is a prep school, a high school prep school with these kids who are on that final stage to get into those Ivy Leagues. And like, they're worried about their high school grades because it'll affect whether or not
they
can go to those fancy schools, which we know now impacts the rest of their life so it greatly does, yeah. on what trajectory they're able to go on and everything that will come
out. No one really explained that to me when I was when I was in high school. Like, I didn't really pick up on all that. I was somehow just dense about that it would make such a big difference. Now I know that it would. The thing is it shouldn't make such a big difference.
Right.
I'd like to propose an idea here that I think is quite important.
Wait, we're already late in the episode.
Not a solution, not a solution, just a way to think about higher education. I think it's important to think about higher education like the apartheid system of racism, you know, so segregation or South African apartheid.
Okay.
I think in America right now, we have a legal apartheid system. We have a legal wealth apartheid system, but we also have a legal education attainment apartheid system.
And meaning,
so apartheid, generally people think of apartheid as just separating blacks and whites, but actually every system of segregation of apartheid is actually a pyramidal system where a certain race is the dominant race. And then there are actually rungs of different races all the way down to the lowest, like lowest valorized race.
Okay.
So like in South Africa, it was like the Afrikaans whites, then below them were the English whites. Then below them were the lighter brown people, like Indian people. Then below them were like half black.
But then you're saying like we should do this? We should not do this.
This is wrong and horrible
and
bad. And what we have today is an educational apartheid system.
Version of that.
And we could eliminate that educational apartheid without doing things like getting rid of meritocracy, like entrance examinations. I think entrance examinations are great because it's an equal, everyone can go and take the test and whoever's ready for it can get into the better school. That's okay. I think the problem is we've created this educational apartheid where if you've stood on your kind of ladder of privilege, you get this sort of moniker. Oh, you went to Harvard, you went to MIT, you went to Berkeley. Even some state schools have this kind of, you know, thing.
Prestige, yeah.
And yeah, that's prestige. And now that prestige unfairly drives all kinds of future privileges. If we just say, you're not really allowed to look at that. They can go and do that for their own well-being. They can go to those schools because those schools will give them the skills they need to be excellent at their future jobs. But you can't actually just do the jump to the name, to the pretend that the name means you have the skills, because it's not true.
Yeah, you're just wanting to bosh all the name value out of, like, you're right, like, go to a place where you will get the things that you actually get from the place, and then hire a person to get the things that you will actually get from the person.
Right.
Don't trade on name value.
Right.
You know,
don't buy the brand jeans because you think the brand is going to make the jeans better. It's like, no,
this t-shirt with the Nike
jeans and go like this and be like, this is a good pair of jeans, you know, and then get those jeans. You know,
this t-shirt is not worth seven times as much as that t-shirt
because it has the
because
Nike
it has
swoosh.
Right. The name brand.
Stop treating people like Nike, like shoes or like t-shirts. Right. And instead just treat them like, how functional is this? Treat them actually more like athletes. So we already do this with athletes. You know, if you go to the Olympics, everyone there is actually the best at what they're doing, you know, because they actually had to run and jump or run and run fast or throw something, and they had to throw it further than everybody else. Like, let's treat people and employees and students more like athletes and less like, you know, commodities. And I think that's great because now we'll have this race to the top in terms of skill building, in terms of how much value people can deliver to society, not just kind of who can like sort of strut more like a different, you know, like a peacock and sort of get the right sort of, you know, associations behind their name.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It would fix accreditation. It would fix a lot of things about education. I think it would fix a lot of things about our economy. Yeah, it's just get rid of the education apartheid with that.
Sounds good.
Anyways, and all you have to do is add one little line to the law. These are the list of protected categories, and then just add educational attainment.
But then everyone else has to redo our resumes. We have to redo our
resumes.
That's
right. Well, people would probably still share. Like, they'd be like, I went to MIT. But then it would be like, okay, you know, the hiring manager has to be like, okay, you know, like, but they can't ask any questions about it or like reference it ever, you know, in writing.
I noted this fact and I have no opinions one way or the other about it. Let's continue our interview.
It's like if you walked in and you were like, I'm super gay, they'd be like, okay, we can't do anything about like, say anything.
It's a weird thing to lead with, but all right.
Yeah, right. Great. But
let's talk about what your greatest work failure was.
Yeah, exactly. Well, cool. This was a fun one.
I like it.
Out of the box solution to problems with education.
Off the page. Totally. Out of the box and off the page, because we're taking the information off of the pages.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for joining us.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Adam. And we'll see you here next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.